The Pasuk Beis, we've gone to the Malbim. Okay, we went to the history. Okay, maybe we should do over here. We went to the Maamar Chazal. Anything else we should go to Mincha Shai? Nah, we do Mincha Shai already. So let's go to Pasuk Beis. Pasuk Beis is Kel Kanoi V'Noikem Hashem. Two expressions of accountability. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a God, a Kano, who takes vengeance. Vinoy came. Kano really means jealous. Hashem is jealous. Jealousy by Hashem is not understood in a negative way. We usually associate jealousy as a very bad midah.
Some translate zealous.
Zealous. Okay, we have to see the Farshim in more detail. Vinoy came. No came is an action. No, the Kano would appear to be an adjective. It is a description of Hashem. Hashem has a nature to be zealous, or he demands justice. When he sees something is not correct, it gets him angry. My Rebbe, Rabbi Belsky, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, that's the major chunk of the book, is this midah, is that when he saw a victim, it got him worked up. It's interesting, there are certain people, you see victims all the time. People are abused. So no, as long as it's not you, you just, you know, what's the difference? But if someone else is a victim, so, you know, whatever, if they'll come to you and ask you for help, you'll do the best that you can to help them. But to be, have a need, have a nature, to see an injustice in society, and to get worked up, and it should bother you, ad kedei kach, that you on your own, you take the initiative to correct what is wrong, that's an entirely different level. Okay, that is a nida of kanoi. Akel Kanoi Rebelsky, when he saw someone that was a victim of a crime, it really bothered him. He really got worked up. He got worked up, and he did even sometimes extreme things. Because it's the Ribbono Shel Olam has this midah of when he witnesses a victim suffer, even if the victim does not call upon Hashem for his assistance, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nevertheless, he intervenes and he wants to correct what is an injustice. V'noikem, noikem is the action. He doesn't just let it sit by. Hashem, noikem Hashem, we have repetition. Noikem Hashem, uval chemo. Hashem is the Baal of Chem of anger. Noikem Hashem litzarav. Hashem, third time the word noikem, Hashem is noikem litzarav against his enemies. V'noiterhu le'oivav, and Hashem is guardian. He's a noiter. There's nekima and netira. What's the difference between nekima? We have to discuss that. Noiterhu le'oivav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he also lays in wait. Lashon of to guarding, to punish the enemy at the exact moment, the correct moment in time. Let's see the Mefarshim. Pasuk Beis Mitzvot David, on the bottom of the page 538, Kel Kanei Hashem, Hashem Hu, Kel Zoyeim, V'noikem. Hashem is Zoyeim, he's angry, V'noikem takes revenge, V'kofal Oid B'Yomar, Noikem Hashem, Noikem Hashem Litzadav, Ritzan Eloima, Rak Litzadav, V'noikem, V'noiter Eva. Noiter means he, enmity. There is it does not necessarily take action, but he holds it within. Lo'ivav, hey mu'umos, the nations of the world. Avaloi chen li Yisrael amo. But not when it comes to Klal Yisrael. There, Hashem is very kind. Let's read the next pasuk. The next pasuk, Gimel is Hashem erech apayim. According to the Mitzvot David, is that when it comes to Klal Yisrael, okay, Hashem is erech apayim, he's slow to anger. Ugedol koyach, he's great in power. Vinakeh lo yinakeh. But to take revenge, he does not take revenge. Hashem bisufa uvis ora darko. Hashem's way is expressions of anger. These two words mean very powerful winds. Two words, which means simply the same in the Mitzvot scene. It says b'sufa ken yikaruach hechazak, a very strong wind, uvis sa'ara, a tempest and a storm, darkoi, but v'onon avak raglov, but there is a cloud of dust by his feet, meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
that's right,
Okay, we'll see. Let's see the Metzudos, how he translates it. Different interpretation. Metzudos pasuk gimel back in the previous page. Hashem erech apayim written the lemar hein emes Hashem marich af ve'enei memaher lefroya gimel haresha. Hashem is patient. Although HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the previous pasuk, Hashem is very angry, gets angry, and he takes revenge. But Hashem does not punish immediately. Hashem holds back his anger, waits for the appropriate moment of time. Because the reason why Hashem is patient, because he has all the time in the world. Chazal always make this point that Hashem is not like man. Man is limited. Man does not know what's going to be tomorrow. So you might as well, if you have the power to do something, do it now. Because who knows what will be tomorrow? Hashem does not have that problem. Hashem has all of the tomorrows that there can possibly be. There's nothing holding back Hashem from delaying, and therefore that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to be Erech HaPayim. It's a whole new twist on Erech HaPayim. Erech HaPayim, man, it appears, if he wants, also can be patient. But it's not necessarily a good thing to be patient because time is running out. The clock is ticking. Person does not know what's going to be. The Ribbono Shel Olam does not have that problem. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the luxury of being in Erech HaPayim. We usually like to associate Erech HaPayim with restraint. Person is angry, you're all worked up, you get angry, and you want to punish, you want it now. We live now in a new generation. We used to live in the microwave generation. The microwave generation is, I want it now, and I want it hot. Okay, now we live even in the better. We live in the prime generation. I want it same day delivery. I don't know if you realize, Amazon has shaken up the world to such a degree, America at least, where most people today, they buy anything that they want, you could possibly imagine, and you get it the next day. Years ago, if you want to buy something, you know what a pain it is? You got to go to the store, you got to go to the department store, you got to go here, you got to go there. 99% of the time what you want, they don't even have. It's not in stock, and they have to order it for you. And if you order it, it takes a week, it takes a month. Today, kibat, anything that you want, as long as you have Prime membership, $99 a year, you get it literally the next day. Sometimes it takes 2 days. It's a whole new world. It's a whole new, and this has totally changed. People are spoiled, and there's a degree of entitlement, and the impatience is just off the charts, and there's an expectation now. And if there's the smallest delay, you go out of your mind. Try to go take away someone's internet for 10 minutes. They lose their minds. Okay, if your internet goes down for a few hours, you people can literally get violent. They get violent because of the expectation. I have to know now. So by the Ribbono Shel Olam, we like to associate that a person who's patient, Erech HaPayim, that really goes to show you're in control of your midos, you're able to restrain yourself. That's true, there's no doubt about that. But when you learn over here in the Mefarshim, they say something very different. Erech HaPayim is not just a description of Hashem's good qualities, that Hashem is patient. It's a reality of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashem is patient not only because Hashem is kind and restrains himself. We have many other expressions of Hashem's midos that express that idea that Hashem holds back beyond what a man can possibly do. But Erech HaPayim, to a degree, is a description of the reality that exists by Hashem that does not exist by a human being. Being that Hashem has nothing to worry about in the future, he has all the time in the world, that's why Hashem can be patient. Whereas man does not know what's going to be soon, so you have no choice but to get the show on the road. Okay, next words of the Mitzvah Stavid. We're on page 538. Kel Kanoi Hashem. I'm sorry. We're on page. 538, let's look Gimel again in the Mitzvot. 538 in the Pasuk Gimel in the Mitzvot. Hashem erech apayim return alaymar, hein enesh Hashem erech af, v'ein emar l'pura gimul v'eresha. Hashem is not quick to punish the wicked. Im ki why, hu gidol koyach, uv'yodoy li'para b'chol zman. That's why Hashem is erech apayim, because there is nothing holding him back. He has all the time in the world. Next page.
I see something very visible here. You have five times Hashem.
Okay.
Speak louder, louder.
In this group, Sukkim. And you give up there is a hayah of every year. That's the time.
That is the.
That's why you emphasize it.
Emphasize.
Later on, it doesn't say Hashem anymore.
Here we're saying Hashem's name multiple times. And these psukim, right? Kelkalai Hashem, Noikim Hashem, Valchem Noikim Hashem, Vinoiter Huloiva Hashem, Hirachapayim Gudol Koyach, Vinakelo Yinake Hashem. Unbelievable. Five times, fantastic. Hashem's name appears here five times. Obviously, there's Agudos Soyal Eretz Yosta. Whenever we use the number five by Hashem in Pirkei Avos, it refers to Hashem's grasp, dexterity. Five people are learning Torah together. What does that mean? Agudosoi, Hashem's aguda, his band, al eretz yosta, is established upon the earth. Why do Chazal associate the aguda with five? It's very simple, because there are five fingers on a hand, and if you want to hold a bundle of reeds, if you want to hold a bundle of spaghetti, you want to hold a bundle of something, you take your hand and you close it and you grasp it. You need the dexterity of five fingers to grasp an aguda. One thing you can pick up, I can pick up the tissue box with one finger. Okay, I can even pick up a sefer, move it around. But if you want to hold on to, a collection, you have a bunch of pens, a collection, you just can't pick up a collection. Let's say you have a bunch of pencils and pens. I want to pick them up. Can you pick up all of them in one finger? Absolutely not. You need to take all of your fingers together and close it. A firm grip. So that requires your entire hand, which is all five fingers. So when we say that Hashem's aguda al eretz yosta, that the aguda, meaning man has joined together for the purpose of serving Hashem, is established upon the earth, we borrow from the hand which has five fingers. So here you say something very single, that Hashem's name appears in this pasuk five times in reference to Hashem's ability and Hashem's desire of justice and punishment and revenge for evil. So it's five times. Five times Hashem's name is mentioned. So there's a degree where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guaranteed to have a strong, dexterous clasp upon man. Yeah.
One of the terms for a thumb is an agudal.
Mm-hmm. Agudal, because the thumb is what? The grips. It's the main one. In the beginning of Yahushua, what did they do? To the enemy? They cut off their thumbs. Because if you don't have a thumb, you can't hold a weapon. You can't grasp a weapon. You're not dangerous. Like when you see when the police, they say, put your hands up, right? I want to see your hands. Why do they demand that you want to see your hands? Because if you could have a weapon. So as long as I can see your hands, you can't harm me. Yeah?
Yeah, it's like a...
Interesting.
Like the ties you have on cables.
Yeah? Just tie your thumb to the rest of your hands. Okay, hands up. You put your hands up. As long as your hands are up, I can, you're not going to be able to harm me. So the truth is, you don't need the whole hand. As long as the thumb is not functional, no longer is the person a threat. Because the degree of dexterity that is necessary to harm with precision and use a weapon, you need a thumb. Okay, now doesn't it also say the Giborim of Bar Kochva, and Michal, you'll help me with this, so what did he demand? He demanded that they cut off one of their thumbs? Was that what he demanded? Bar Kochva, in order to join his army, to be a soldier in the army, he demanded that each soldier cut off his thumb. I believe it was the thumb. I think it was the thumb, and the Chazal were not happy with this. The rabbis did not approve of this. Why did he demand? So I guess it means that you had to be so powerful, even without a thumb, you can still shoot. You can still be an archer or hold a sword. That's how much power you had to have. Discipline. I really learned the Pshat. Is discipline. That a person is willing to go so far to harm himself, it's like suicidal. You have to prove, before you enter into my army, that you're suicidal. Because many times in war, that's the way it is. Many missions in war, even today, are purely suicidal. And if you don't have that mindset of being willing to give up your life for the cause, you're going to be a coward. You're not going to succeed. So you have to show, to a degree, before you join the army, that you have that need within you to be willing to be Meiser Nefesh.
That's probably not regular army. That's probably more of an elite force.
Well, that was Bar Kochva. Bar Kochva and the Chazal were not happy with that approach. Okay, let's go further. So it's we have five times. Back to the Mitzvot Stavit on page 541. Vinakeh lo yinakeh. Hashem does not exact revenge. Aval hu eina minakeh levater al haresha mikol v'chol. Mitzvah Stavit here is a very powerful pshat. And this obviously will tie into what we say in Parashat Kisisa, which we laid on every time the Sibur. Vinakeh lo yinakeh. Now, by the way, we stop. When we read the Yud Gimel Midos of Rachamim, Hashem Hashem Kol Racham V'Chan Erech Hapayim Rav Chesed V'Emes Meitzeh Chesed Lo Alofim Nos Oven V'Fesha V'Chato'o V'Na Kei. And we stop there. But that's not where the pasuk stops. The pasuk is V'Na Kei Lo Yina Kei. How could you stop in the middle of a phrase? It's bad enough to stop in the middle of a pasuk, which is forbidden. Called Psuka Danan Demoish Loi Pasuk Anan Loi Paskinan. But when we say this pasuk together, when the Balkriya gets that pasuk, we actually stop in the middle of a phrase. Vinakeh Lo Yinakeh. Hashem does not take revenge. So what does it mean? So Chazal asked this question, and they say there are two different expressions. Hashem takes revenge from the Rishoim. But lo yinakeh from those who do teshuvah from the tzaddikim. The tzaddik did an avera, and he did teshuvah. Has Hashem's midah of rachamim lo yinakeh. So Chazal pretty much break up the expression vinakeh lo kinakeh kama. Hashem takes revenge lo yinakeh. Hashem does not take revenge, depending if you're his friend or foe. Now,
in the way it's saying, he does, but not always.
Correct. Depending on who. Now that's a drush. That's a drush. But what is the pshutoi shel mikra? Because the pasuk, the tamei hamikra, when you lay in the pasuk regularly, and in fact the Baal Kriya, he lays it regularly. He doesn't stop in the middle. It's only we who respond. We break it up. We stop afterward v'nakeh. But the Baal Kriya reads the expression to v'nakeh lo yinakeh. What is the pshutoi shel mikra? So for that, we need to come on to a mitzvah stavit here in Nachum. Who'd ever imagine a sefer that many people don't even know exists? Nachum Hamadi. You say Nachum. Who's Nachum? It was in the Gemara's daf yesterday, right? There was a Nachum 2 days ago. Nachum. Who ever heard of Nachum? Nachum Hamadi. So Nachum here, he says, v'nakeh lo yinakeh. And over here, the mitzvah stavit explains this to mean, aval hu eina menakeh levater al haresha mikol v'chol. It's taken together. Hashem does not completely forgive. There's always going to be a degree of punishment. There's no such thing as a free lunch. It's cost at least $1.25. You can't get 100% free. Even if you get a very deep discount, you still have to pay a copayment, right? You don't want people to take advantage of the system. So copay. Go to a doctor. You have the best insurance. Not all, but usually even the best insurance, they demand that you pay at least $1. You need to get at least $1, at least $20. What's the lumbus? Well, the government, well, they can't afford, if they're already paying $1 million, they can't afford another $20. If they're already being ripped off, what's the difference? Another $20. The answer is, for them, Eino Chanami, it's not a big deal. But don't take advantage of us. Don't take advantage. $20 you're going to pay, or you'll pay. There's going to be a small token amount in order to remind you that we're not here to be taken advantage of. Where did the government get this from? They got it from the Bible. Because by the Ribbono Shel Olam, there's a copay. Okay, this is a very fascinating topic. That even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very forgiving, Yom HaKippurim, Hashem forgives Klal Yisrael. We have an entire principle of Teshuvah, but there's a copay. There's a copay. You have to suffer a little bit for your Avera. It's not 100% free in order to remind you that Hashem is not Mevater. Hashem, this is not a world of Hefker. It's true, Hashem was kind. He allowed man to do Teshuvah. But there's a copay. You have to realize there are consequences for doing Averas.
Someone once said, Hashem is not Santa Claus.
Okay, that's a very powerful idea. You don't always learn that principle. Many people walk away at the end of the day thinking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Santa Claus. Okay, and Hashem does give you everything for free, and there is no consequence. It's not true. He's not menakeh. Hashem does not cleanse. The word menakeh comes from noki. Noki means innocent, clean. Levater al haresha mikol v'chol. Hashem does not forgive entirely. There is a small degree of punishment. Besufa uvis ara darkoi hiluchoi hu beruach sufa usara. Hashem's ways are with storm and tempest. What does that mean? Ritzayna lemar kishaba la anoish haoyev mevi ruach sufa usara lehania ulechaloisa maher. When Hashem comes to his enemy to destroy the enemy, Hashem comes with a massive wind. Hashem comes. Hashem lets it be known that He is present.
Associate storms and storming with a raging storm,
okay.
Or tempestuous.
Now, a storm, by the way, is a very unique metaphor, because a storm is not something, a strong wind is not visible. You can't see it. Can you hear it?
Yeah, sometimes.
Now let me ask, when you hear a storm, are you hearing this the wind, or are you hearing the environment?
The objects.
The objects, the buildings. Those, if you create for yourself an area that's completely flat, no hills, no buildings, nothing. And there's not even grass, nothing. And you produce, you create an enormously powerful wind.
You can hear the molecules of air even if you put a cup over your cup.
Okay, but that of course.
You hear molecules of air bouncing.
Okay, so that's the question. You're saying that a wind does produce its own natural sound. It goes without saying if you have a wind blowing between buildings. A wind blowing along mountains, or there's grass, or there are trees. So the very strong wind, you hear it. You hear the howling of the wind. But what would be if you have an area that's completely flat, and there's a wind that's traveling 100 miles an hour? Do you hear sound?
Yeah, it would be because jet engines is a
winner. But so when you hear a jet engine, you hear the engine. Are you hearing the ear?
Oh, the ear
you're hearing, is that true? Okay. So then you have to understand this metaphor. But the engine makes noise. The engines are deafening.
Yeah.
But take away the sound of the engine. When air flows very rapidly in the sky, does that rapid movement of air produce sound that is audible, that is loud enough for a human being to hear? I don't know the answer. If yes, if not, then there's a very fascinating principle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes, it's invisible. It's the power is enormous. Okay, a hurricane, a tornado, the power of Hashem is enormous. But think about it. Wind is something you certainly can't see. And if it's true that there is no natural sound of ear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a very powerful musa with the pasuk is Hashem, when he comes to punish, he punishes bisufo vis ora darkoi. Hashem, when it's over, it's very clear the city has been destroyed. A tornado or a hurricane has obliterated the entire, can do an enormous destruction. But yet, you can't define it. You can't see it. You can't touch it. And even if you'll tell me that there is sound, the sound in and of itself, of the wind itself, is silent pretty much. You hear the noise, the howling, because it's moving objects and it's moving between buildings. So that's a marshal to the way Hashem punishes. A person thinks, oh, I did an Avera. No one saw me do the Avera. It was me and Hashem. And I got away with it. And the truth is, you didn't get away with nothing. You look back 10 years, look back from what you've done, the time that you did these terrible Averos, and you look back and you see, you know something, Hashem, he got me. He punished me. Oh, but Hashem did not come and punish me. I didn't see his body. I didn't see a body. I didn't see a sound. I didn't, yet the matzav, the situation that you find yourself in now is not good. And it's unusually not good and only can be understood as it was the Yad Hashem. Who did this to you? But where was Hashem? Can I put my finger on Hashem coming to me and punishing me? I can't put my finger on it. I can't see it. I can't hear it. It's a reality that the situation that I find myself in came about through Hashem. What's the mashal? What's the mashal? That Hashem's way is beruach, besufa, uvis ara. Wind is something you can't see. It's something that you really can't hear all that well, maybe a little bit. You can't hear all that well. And yet, we are very well aware of the power of destruction that it brings. Don't think just because you don't see Hashem coming and punishing you out in the open, you're getting away with an Avera. Hashem is there. He's destroying the Rasha in an invisible way, no different than the nature of wind and Sara. Let's see further in the Mitzudos.
They are the messengers of Hashem. It's not Hashem.
Okay, there's another idea. The shluchim. Harbe shluchim lamakon. Okay, but why does Hashem use this as his shluchim? Why? There's not Hashem can use any rain. There Hashem can use hurricanes. I mean earthquakes. There are many things that Hashem uses as his agent in order to bring destruction. There's something very unique about these items is that they cannot be seen. And it says here, Bisufa uvisara darkoi. It's Hashem's derech to come and to bring destruction. Fine, it's a shliach, fine, in a chanami, it's a messenger. But it's a very unique type of agent of destruction, which in and of itself is invisible. And yet it brings darkoi. That's the standard way for Hashem bringing punishment.
That's what Eliyahu HaNavi is asking from. It says that lo baruach Hashem, lo bezeh.
Cold mamadaka. Cold mamadaka. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Shechina. Okay. In this context, we'll focus on this context. Let's see them back to the Mitzvah of David. Bisufa v'sara darkoi, achiluchoi hu beruach sufa u'sara, v'utzana lema b'shkishabo la'anosh ha'ev, maybe ruach sufa u'sara, la'hanyam, to move them, u'lechaloysam, to destroy them aher. V'anon avak raglov, v'utzana lema, ha'gezeroys ha'baos misi boso, alo oyev, the punishments that come upon his enemy, heim lo, la'choyshech v'afeylo, k'anon v'ham, when Hashem brings destruction, it's comparable to darkness. The metaphor of a cloud is darkness and dust that falls underneath the raglayim. That's also part of the metaphor that this dust, which is unpleasant, is the way of Hashem destroying his enemy. Let's see Rashi. Rashi pasuk beis and gimel. On page 538, Kel Kanoi v'noikem Hashem al zaroi shol sanchediv nisnabei Nachum. So here we're finally getting down into the nitty gritty. What exactly is Nachum coming to say prophecy for? To who? Who is the target of his prophecy? On page Rashi. Rashi, page 538. Did I skip? I'm sorry, did I skip? No, we did right? We did Aleph. We did Aleph. Rashi, Pasuk Beis, on page 538. Kel na kanoi v'nokem Hashem al zarish shel sancheriv v'nisna b'nachum. Nachum is speaking to the seed of sancheriv. Sancheriv exiled the Aseres HaShvatim. He then went to lay siege to Yerushalayim. And Lel, he came with an army of at least 800,000 soldiers. Some say that was just the leadership. There were a lot more than that. And miraculously, Lel Pesach, the night of Pesach, they all did not wake up. But Lel Pesach, none of the soldiers woke up, with the exception, the Pasuk says, of a handful. Sancheriv and a few other people woke up the next morning, and they saw the nace of Hashem. He fled, and eventually his children killed him. His own children murdered their father. This took place in the days of Menashe, and we learned before the reason why this sefer is unique, and it does not tell us Bimei Menashe ben Menashe ben Chizkiyahu, like we would expect it to say this line, like it says this type of nusach at the beginning of every single sefer of Navi. It's because Menashe was such a wicked man. Nachum, whoever put into writing this sefer, could not bring himself to say the words that he said prophecy in the time of the king Menashe. We would wish that there was never such a king to begin with, so we don't even want to acknowledge his existence. So it's like, you know, whitewashing history almost. But we don't want to acknowledge he existed. You would expect, yeah, whenever you go and you want to date. All of the other Sifrei Nach begin by telling us that when it took place, but not here. K'moshe Masina b'Seder Olam. Where do we know that the Nevuah was given over in time of Menashe? We know that from a Medrash, a very famous Medrash called Seder Olam, which Rashi was very fond of. Rashi quotes Seder Olam continuously throughout all of his commentaries. Wherever Rashi has a chance, he quotes Seder Olam. It's a Medrash of history, timeline. It establishes a timeline of major events in Jewish history. Not everything in Seder Olam is agreed upon by other commentators. Seder Olam is one opinion, it's one group of Talmud tradition, but there are other traditions which are in disagreement, and it's not necessarily possible to reconcile other Mamari Chazal with what it says in Seder Olam. We always like to try to, when we find a contradiction, to say Elu v'Elu Divri Elokim Chayim, but it does not always work, especially when you're dealing with dates and people. If you're going to say that a certain person lived during this time period, during this, his colleague was so-and-so, and you find another Medrash that says, at a later point in time, it's very hard to reconcile these Maamari Chazal when they give you dates. But in any event, Rashi is very fond Kel of Seder Olam, Kel Kanoi V'Nokim Hashem, Me'osh Nifral Yisrael, Me'oiveihem. Now here he learns, Rashi, that Hashem is zealous, V'Nokim, he exacts revenge from when? Me'oz Shenifra Yisrael, Me'oiveihem, from the time when Hashem took revenge against the enemies of the Jewish people. Vigam also, Adayin Ata now, Noikem Hu Ubal Chema, V'osid Hu Liyos Noikem Litzarov in the future, Kish Shehechrivu Es Artsoy V'Higlo Es Amot. So let's appreciate what Rashi has done here for us, and if not for Rashi, we'll be totally in the dark. What is all of this repetition? Rashi answers, Hoya Hoive V'Yiyeh. When the Pasuk begins, Kel Kanoi V'Noikem Hashem, that's the past. In the past, Mitzrayim, the Canaanim, our enemies of the past, Hashem has always come forward and protected us and destroyed our enemies. Next, now when it says, Uval, Noikem Hashem, Uval Chema, now, in the lifetime of Nachum, Nachum is speaking in his lifetime, in the time of Menashe, the Jewish people were suffering in the hands of Sanhedrin, various enemies. Hashem today will punish our enemies. And then when it says the next expression of Noikem Hashem Litzarav V'noiter Hu Le'oivav, in the future, this is the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will guarantee V'osad Hu Le'ois Noikem Litzarav Noiter means he guards. He guards his anger, his hate, his enmity, as aivaso, his enmity loivav, his enemies. Period. So this is the beautiful parish of Rashi, past, present, future. Kel kanoi v'noikem Hashem is the past. Noikem Hashem uval chema is the present. Noikem Hashem litzarav v'noiter hu le'oivav is the future. Next, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shalosh nikimois halalu k'neged shalosh goluyos shehiglo sancheiriv es Yisrael. Rashi is very fond of this idea. We mentioned this idea many, many times. Basic yisoid, the golus of the Aseres Hashvatim took place in three stages. It's a very important yisoid. It did not happen overnight. Three very different stages. The psukim, you have to read the psukim very carefully. In Sefer Yeshaya, where it describes the first exile was done with white gloves. Very delicately. The Jews on the other side of the Yarden, Ruvain, Gad, Chatzi, Shevet, Menashe, they were put on airplanes. Everyone traveled business class. And they were served delicious meals, and they were transported to Ashur. Then came phase two. This was years later. He exiled all of the Jews living along the coast, along the Mediterranean, on the opposite side, on the west. And they were not taken business class. They traveled by foot. It was not pleasant. But at least there was a degree of human dignity. The third wave, which was the center of Eretz Yisrael, and that appears to be the bulk of the Golus, they were marched naked, literally naked, from Eretz Yisrael to Ashur, and they were brutalized. They were death marches, pretty much. Not everyone even made it. It was a brutal treatment of Klal Yisrael. There were three different waves of exile, according to Rabbi Shimon. This pasuk is broken up into three parts. Kel kanoi v'noikem Hashem. That's for the first wave of exile. Now notice the term is not as intense. It was a sin to exile Klal Yisrael from their homeland. There will be punishment, but the term that's used is not extreme. The next degree of exile, which was much, much more unpleasant, we find the terminology has been upgraded. It says Noikem Hashem. Hashem takes revenge. Uval Chema. Hashem is angry because Sancheriv, in the second wave of exiles, was not very nice. He brutalized the Jews. And the third expression, which refers to the third wave of exiles, which was horrific and brutal and not way beyond any standard of dignity, there we observe the most extreme terms. Noikem Hashem litzarav. Hashem calls here and his enemies. V'noiterhu le'oivav. Two words, a tsar and an oyev. Two different terms. Hashem is holding in his intense hatred for what they did to us, and the day will come when they will be punished. So we've taken over here two very beautiful interpretations to understand this pasuk. The parish of first Rashi, past, present, future, and this parish of Rabbi Shimon that is quoted by Rashi, corresponding to the three waves of exile. Then Rashi goes further. Rashi. What? Baal Chema.
Not only like Baal Tfilah, Baal Tfilah.
Right. You're the master. You're the master. You are in your hands. You are the master. Exactly. It's a Baal. It's a very important word to say. He's the Baal Chema. Now, by the way, isn't the word Chema feminine? So it shouldn't say Baalas? So what is it? Baal Zohar in a Keva? It could be either.
No, it's not. You can say Baalas.
So shouldn't it be Baalas Chema?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hashem is the Baal. Hashem is the Zohar.
Who is the one who has mastery over it? It's Hashem.
Hashem. Of Chema. Even though it's a feminine item, it's going to be kind of fine.
Baal
Chema. Okay, there's a lot of discussion about that people, they very commonly say the Baal Koreh. The Baal Koreh. So Medaktikim, they like to, like they love it. This is a feast for them to attack the ignorant like me. How could you say a Baal Koreh? The word Koreh means the Baal Koreh, the master of the reading. And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, nowhere does it ever say the term Baal Koreh. It says the Koreh. The person who reads the Torah is called the Koreh.
Okay.
You don't say the Baal Koreh, that's redundant. The word Koreh already includes within it the word Baal. If you want to say the word Baal, then you should say the Baal Kriyah, the master
just
of
like,
the reading.
Right, as you say, just like
the Baal Tefillah. Oh, so the Baal, the Baal Tekiyah. I've never heard someone say the Baal Tekiyah.
Really?
They say the Tokeya. And then they say the Baal Tokeya. And you don't hear people complaining about the Baal Tokeya. It's very common to hear people say the Baal Tokeya. And you don't hear people attacking them and say, how could you be so ignorant and say the Baal Tokeya? How can you be so ignorant? Don't you know it's the Tokeya? Or you want to say the Baal Tekiyah. You don't hear that. But if someone says the Baal Koreh, oh, this is a festival of attack.
How about Baal HaKoreh?
The Baal HaKoreh? No, the same thing. Same thing. Redundant. It's even more redundant. The hay makes it even worse. Triple. The Baal HaKoreh, the Koreh. All you need to say is the Koreh. Or your HaKoreh is also a bit redundant.
No, that would be the Baal of the person rather than the Koreh.
On Friday we discussed Moshe Rabbeinu says Loi Ish Divarim. Moshe should have really said Loi Baal Divarim. And that's what triggered our discussion that Ish Divarim has a whole different meaning than Baal Divarim. Simply means I'm not an eloquent speaker. I don't have a command of the language. I'm not a person of language. Ba, then it should say, I'm not a master of words. But it doesn't say that. It says an Ish Divarim. Here, this is a very unique expression. Baal Chema.
Noun after the Baal.
That's right.
That's a noun. Tfilah,
kri'ah,
chema.
A noun, not a verb.
Halomur.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Right. So here, it's a very unique. Here it says, uval chema. We use this term. This term is a real term. The word, eating the word Baal, is a, even though when we talk about the Koreh, the one who reads the Torah, he's called the Koreh. We don't add the word Baal. It's called the Koreh. That's because the Koreh is the person. He's reading. Here, Hashem is not exercising anger. Hashem is in control of the midah of anger. And when he wants, he will dispense it. And when he does not want, he will not. He is the Baal. He is in control.
He's the master.
The master of Chema. Ubaal Chema. So therefore, these are the Yisodos we learned so far. We learned three Yisodos. One from Rav Kalman, Hashem's name appears five times in these two psukim. That itself is a limud. Five is agudos el eretz yosta. Hashem's nida of the acknowledgement that Hashem is present is very powerful. It's very clear. It's an aguda. Then we learned the yisoid of past, present, future, and the third yisoid we learned the three waves of exile. Let's go further. Pasuk Hey Gimel, Hashem erech apayim gedol koyachu v'hayocheles biyodel lehinokeim. Hashem has the power to take revenge. V'asher lo miel nikmasai. Why is it that we do not find Hashem punishing immediately? The answer is lefi she'erech apayim hu. He's patient. Umikol mokoyim nake lo yinake. And even though Hashem does have the power, he does not always take full nake lo yinake. Now that Rashi would seem to say, at times Hashem does not take revenge at all. But v'nakeim, nake, lo yinake. Hashem has rachmanis. Hashem holds himself back 100%. So take note, that's different than what it says in the Mitzudos. The Mitzudos, we have already three perushim for this term, nake lo yinake. What Chazal say on Parshas Kisisa, that we break up the term, nake, kamo, lo yinake. To the tzaddikim, Hashem is forgives. To the rishaim, lo yinake. Two completely separate different terms. Put a period between nake and lo yinake. The second perush, read it together as an expression, and it means there is a copay, a token copay. Although Hashem is kind and gracious, and Hashem holds back and does not punish, there will always be a small iota of suffering and punishment in order to remind you this is not a world of hefkerus. There is accountability. And now we have what Rashi seems to say is, no, Hashem is so kind and gracious, v'nake lo yinake. Hashem completely holds back. There is no punishment whatsoever. So far we have three perushim for nake lo yinake, and we have two perushim for what it means, erech apayim. Is erech apayim a midah of Hashem? Hashem is so kind and gracious. Hashem has the ability to control himself, to be patient, something that man does not have. Man has no patience, especially not today, not in 2020. There's zero patience left for mankind. But Hashem has patience. Or what it means is, nake lo yinake, what it means is, erech apai means Hashem has the luxury of being patient, because time is in his possession. Okay, now let's go to the next Arashi. Hashem, page 540. Hashem b'sufo v'sara darkoi. Heim shluchav. This is what Rav Kalman said. These are Hashem's agents. Lipara me'oivav shenemar b'mitzrayim b'ruach kodim azah. Coming up very soon, next week, Parshas B'shalach, the Shira. Hashem punishes with a ruach kodim azah. The east wind is the most powerful wind. There are four winds. Each wind has a unique character. The east wind is the wind that Hashem uses when he brings punishment. Uvador hamabul minishmas elo eloka yoyvedu. That's an incredible insight, what Rashi here is telling us, because if you could ask this to the average person, they'll never tell you this. How did Hashem destroy the Dor Hamabul? It says, Hashem opened up the Arubois Hashemayim and opened up the Tohoim, and there was a flood from above and from below. Wind? Who ever heard of wind? If you want to be more mystical, you'll open up a Gemara, and the Gemara there will say that Hashem, took out two stars. There were two stars, Kima, were dislodged from their orbit, which modern day science explained to mean the Earth does not travel in a perfect circle. Why not? Why doesn't the Earth travel in a perfect circle around the Sun? The Earth travels in an ellipse because of the magnetic pull of the planets. The Mitzius is, as the Earth travels around the Sun, in certain areas of this galaxy, there's a larger cluster of stars. And other parts of the galaxy, there's less stars. each star is produces a magnetic pull, and the Earth, as it travels through around the sun, it's being pulled at different degrees, different times of the year, because that's the way the Metzius is of how many stars there are in any given portion. So according to why I believe, Dr. Aaron Pratt always tells you this, but I really think this is very, very fascinating, that before the Mabul, the world traveled, the Earth traveled around the sun. He told us Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe was very, very fascinated with this pshat. Before the Mabul, the Earth traveled around the sun in a perfect circle. Perfect circle. Today in nature, by the way, there's no such thing as a perfect circle. There's no such thing as finding an apple that's perfect circle. There's no tree that's a perfect circle. Does not exist today in the world, in this world, a perfect circle. Everything is slightly off. What about the Earth traveling around the sun? So Dr. Aaron Price told Rav Moshe that the calculations that there's machlokes in the Gemara how to calculate time. There is Shmuel and there is Rav Abba. Shmuel's calculation is a very simple calculation. I think it's Rabbi Abba. Is that Rabbi Abba? I think it's Rabbi Abba. It's a very complicated calculation which we know to be correct. And the truth is, we know better. Today we know scientifically that even he was off a little bit. If you want to go into the fractions, we can go even deeper. But Shmuel's calculation works perfectly with the assumption that the Earth travels around the sun in a perfect circle. If the Earth would travel around the sun in a perfect circle, man would live, his claim, Dr. Aaron Price, 1,000 years. A person would naturally, there would be no disease. This world would be pristine. Everything would function perfectly. The reason why this world is chaotic and man is subject to disease and illness is because there's something wrong with this world. The engine is not working correctly. The Earth is not going around the sun in a perfect, in an ellipse, in a perfect circle. It's going around an ellipse. So when it goes off a little bit too much, things get shaken up. Man, there are storms. Things, the nutrients in the fruits and vegetables are not the way they should be because the Earth went a little bit too far. But then it comes back, but it comes back too close. It goes around the sun in an ellipse. When did that change? It's the Beferish of Gemara. Hashem, when he wanted to bring the Mabul, he took two stars out of Kima. You know, when you take away a star, you change the magnetic pull. The gravitational pull. It's not the same anymore. The gravitational pull of the Earth is not the same. Hashem disturbed the perfect gravitational pull of the sun, of the Earth rotating around the sun by removing stars. And that messed everything up. And when that happened, immediately it caused a massive flood. The Mabul came. And even when the Earth healed, because just like a human being has the ability to heal, and the Earth ultimately healed when the Mabul was over, but it never was restored to its original pristine state. And that's why Mikan al Haba, man can only live for 120 years, and the Earth is not what it used to be. So this everything fits, all these ideas come in, it fits very well. And Dr. Aaron Price, he said that that's the difference between Shmuel and Rav Abba. They're both correct. Shmuel's calculation was based upon time from Maisa Bereshis, when the Earth was perfect, was traveling in a perfect circle, and Rabbi Abba was discussing the calculated time based upon the consequence, the after ramifications of removing those two stars of what we have today. So which one? They're both correct. In halacha, we pretty much follow Shmuel. How can you follow Shmuel? Because that's the way Hashem made the world. Just like we have a principle that the way the Torah was given at Sinai is the halacha, even though many things have changed. especially when it comes to laws of treifus and animals, kashrus, things may have changed, but we follow the way the world existed at the time of Matan Torah. As far as time is concerned, we follow time the way it existed at the time of Maase Bereishis. And our calculations pretty much are based upon the fact that the earth goes around the sun in a perfect circle. Even though Chazal were not blind, and they knew that the calculation of Rabbi Abba is correct, yeah, that's based upon a problem. That's based upon an innovation of Kima having been dislodged from the cluster of stars, and things got off track. Why don't scientists today invest in technology instead of going to the moon? Why don't they figure out a way to get the earth to go around the sun in a perfect circle like it used to be? They have technology to do that?
No.
Who says they don't? They have enough technology to destroy this world. They can blow up this, if they want, they can blow up this world. They can do it, right? They can do that. They have enough weapons to completely obliterate this earth. So don't they have enough?
Smashed earth to pieces, they
can. Maybe, no. If they work on it enough, they probably can. If they put their minds to it, they can probably come up with enough atomic bombs to obliterate this world to total nothingness. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
They don't need it, they're politicians.
Politicians, they already did it. They already did it, right? How do you know they can do it? Because they already did it. But wouldn't that be a nice science project for all of our scientists to get the earth to travel around the sun in a perfect circle? You know what that would mean? It would mean man, possibly, it would be a very different world. It would be a very different world. Would it be better? I mean, this is all a theory.
The earth also tilts. That's
we're not touching that. Let's leave the tilting. Okay, that's another. So you suggested that part of the marble was Hashem tilted the earth.
That's what it is.
Before there were no seasons?
No, it says right away.
The
seasons.
Hashem created Chorus.
Okay, I don't know. It's a thought. With that in mind, let's go back. Let's go back to our Rashi. Rashi says, now the reason why did I discuss all of this, did I mention all this? Because over here Rashi says something that's very, very fascinating, which you're not going to see often. Minishmas Eloka Yovedu. The marble, Rashi says, based upon a pasuk, you have also included the wind. So even though we've all been taught that the marble was exclusively the heavens, Hashem opened up the Arubas Hashemayim Niftachu, and the Tohoim Rabba, the fountains of the earth, were opened. It's a pasuk. The Psukim in Chumash and Parashas Noach clearly indicate that there was something going on in heaven, in the sky, which brought a flood, and there was something going on in the earth. The depths of the earth were opened up. That's a pasuk. You can't deny that. From below and above. In Chazal, in the Gemara, we have a tradition that there was a change in the earth's gravitational pull, because it says that Hashem removed stars. And when you remove stars, that automatically causes a shift in movement, the gravitational pull. Now we learn there's a third element that contributed to the marvel. And that is wind. Where do you find wind? You see wind anywhere in the pasuk? It doesn't say wind anywhere. Well, it's a pasuk in Iyov. It's a third critical element in the Bria. We once had a very long discussion about this, not going back, is that where in Maase Bereishis do we find Hashem created gravity? We won't spend a lot of time on this. Gravity is one of the most essential qualities of this earth. If there is no gravity, cannot live.
The universe.
In Maase Bereishis, everything that was created has to fit into one of the first 6 days. Hashem made it in 6 days. And the Psukim, they tell us that we can fit anything that we know that exists in this world into one of the 6 days. All of the elements in creation on the earth, Bereishis, Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim, the earth. So anything that's part of the earth is the first day. The Shemayim is the first day. water. Okay, well, you go through the Pesukim. But what about gravity? Where in Maase Bereishis did Hashem create gravity? Which Pasuk? What is gravity included in? Okay, it's a different topic of discussion, but it's part of Hashem's Bereiah. It's clear that the Mabul came about through Hashem altering gravity. Hashem changed the gravitational pull of this earth because he took stars out of heaven. And we know as a fact today that causes, you take away one star, you knock out one star in the sky, there is a change in the earth's orbit around the sun. It may be so insignificant that to us, we don't really detect anything, and we may believe that nothing is really happening, but we don't really know. Maybe every time there's a tornado, there's a hurricane, it's because a star somewhere out there just imploded, or just whatever happened to it, just disintegrated for whatever reason. And that absence caused a slight change in the Earth's gravitational pull, which resulted in a tornado, in a hurricane. Who's not to say? Some people, they suggest that. We don't even fully comprehend the connection, the relationship between the Earth's rotation around the sun to its gravitational pull. But you cannot deny the fact that removing a cluster of stars made a very big difference. Here we learn a new secret that you're not going to see in the Pasuk. It's tradition. It's Iyov. It's wind. Hashem sent to this world a very powerful wind. It's a Pasuk. Beruach, let me just finish the Pasuk. We're going to thought. We're going to do it. It's Minishmas Elokai Yovedu. From the breath of Hashem, where they were destroyed. Now, we would simply learn that Pasuk thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a command. Hashem decided, he gave a command, I want these wicked people of Dor HaMabul to be obliterated. But that's not how Rashi learns the Pasuk. Rashi understands this to mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew. He gave out, he blew. By blowing, he brought about destruction. Bitzar Nemar, concerning Tsar, the nation of Tsar, Tyre. This is a different Pasuk. A Pasuk in Yechezkel describing the nation of Tsar who caused great harm to Klal Yisrael. It says about them, Ruach HaKodim Shevarech broke you. Shever, broke you. Three examples in Tanakh where wind is used as an agent of Hashem to bring destruction. Number one, the Egyptians. Beruach Kodim Azah. Number two, the Dor HaMabul. Number three, the nation of Tsar. What do all three have in common? Rashi is giving us three examples. It must be some type of common denominator between Tsar and the Egyptians and the Dor HaMabul. Okay, now the Egyptians and Tsar, there is a similarity. They both of them hosted or contributed to the existence of Klal Yisrael. What do I mean by that? Egypt was our host. We lived there for 210, that's where we developed. The Kor HaBarzel. Tsar, who built the Beis HaMikdash. Who is the one that provided the workers and the materials to build the Beis HaMikdash? Tsar. Okay?
Also, both Paro and
Chira. Chira, Melech Tsar. Exactly, excellent. Now, what about the Dor? How does the Dor HaMabul get stuck in the middle if there is some connection between the two? The Dor HaMabul wasn't a simple generation. Like they say, the two things they say, Esav was not a simple person. Don't just classify Esav as a thug. Esav was the most complex person in existence. Extremely complicated person. The Dor HaMabul wasn't just a generation of lowlifes. There was a lot of sophistication, a lot of planning in their way of life. It wasn't just, everything was by chance, everything, that's how it turned out. Society is just Balei Taiva, Shagoyim running the streets. No, it's not, that's the oversimplification of Tanakh. Dor HaMabul were very clear, were very sophisticated people in how they wanted to live their lives and what they envisioned for the future of this world. And they put into motion some extremely complicated things. Who knows? Who's not to say that the technology that existed in the Dor HaMabul would make us look like dinosaurs? People say this. There are a lot of who says that they didn't. These were the brilliant people. They didn't have technology that they can do things that would make us look like fools in those days. Who knows what they had? Everything that existed in the Dor HaMabul was obliterated to nothing. You ever see these science fiction movies where they show like, go back in the future of time, like we think we're so sophisticated, and then the world reverts. There's a big asteroid and destroys the world, and the world goes back to becoming cavemen. It's not fiction. It's not so simple that something like that has not happened in this world as we know it. It's very likely the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFloga had technology, understanding of science way beyond possible, way beyond what we know today. Shlomo HaMelech also, it seems he had some knowledge that's been lost from us. What happened to all of these things? There are a lot of wars, a lot of things happen in this world, so we don't really know. But in any event, we have over here three different nations that Hashem destroyed with wind. And now we're coming to add a fourth. The fourth that will be destroyed with wind will be Ashur. Ashur will join the club. He's going to join Mitzrayim. He's going to join Tsar, join the Dor HaMabul. And now Ashur, welcome aboard to being the next nation that's going to be destroyed by when listen to the Rashi, Anan Avak Raglov, Gambu Derech Nikmosai, Hashem's way is also with dust. Vayash Keif Hashem El Machane Mitzrayim Bamud Eish V'Onon, a cloud. He Onon Yichasena, another pasuk of Tzar, a cloud. Hashem darkness. Hashem brings darkness upon his enemies. So in this pasuk we learn that Ashur is going to suffer two things. He's going to suffer wind and darkness. Unique. There's a unique way to punish each criminal. The Dor HaMabul was punished with many ways. Wind, but also primarily water. The Dor HaFloga, none of the above. There was no darkness. Doesn't say there was wind. Doesn't say there was water. It was a different type of punishment. Each nation that is punished uniquely, midah keneged midah. Davi, you wanted to say something?
I wanted to say, when Hashem took two stars from the
Kima
Eretz, there was balance between the two sides of the...
I don't know what was. The Gemara says, when Hashem brought, the way Hashem brought the Mabul was by removing two stars.
From that side or one side?
One side, from one side. And that triggered an imbalance, which began the Mabul. It says in the Pasuk, though, that Hashem opened up the heavens, and he opened up the depths. And we just learned now in Sefer Iyov, it says that Hashem sent a very strong wind. All right, we're going to stop here. We'll learn a little Sefer Chassidim, just a little bit, and then we'll talk about something else.
Did you see my friend
Smiler? I saw him on Shabbos, yes. The project that I wanted to do, I don't want to do.
Didn't work out.
I don't think so. Not yet. Maybe soon.
At least we're aware of what to
be.
It sounds like
I'm
coming home.
I'm a sound. Light. Sound shock.
Move it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The direction of our explosion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm at the same. So I won it.
the thing that I forgot last night that I was in the middle of telling you from the story of Esther, why they made clothes and not why they made the way that's called. It's because the idea of Shekinah.
Yeah.
She wanted the Shekinah to be present.
Okay.
Inside. Shekinah is not present when there is a Bozor. First part of it. Maybe I should place the
Shekinah.
Usher. He didn't make her request then. Also dressed in his wouldn't bow to
him. How are you?
Second part.
The yarmulke is getting bigger.
In her place, where she didn't have any of that stuff. And Haman was not given a chance to change into his other clothing.
The clothing, his clothing was a similar Avodah Zarah.
He had
all over. So in order to prevent him from bringing that with the defiling sanctity of the Makkah,
and therefore bringing the Shekhinah in on her side.
The Shekhinah on her side does not have the Avodah Zarah present. Very nice. Very good. Very good.
I think it's from Yaros Divine.
Take every day. That's how he talks to us.
Yeah. You have to just read it.
I learned the tefillah every day. I learned something else, something new. I say it all my life. I focus on something.
Yeah, it's very important.
And it's all what we learn now. It's right here.
Yeah.
There's
excellent.
Nothing is new.
Really?
This is what I like of Navi. Navi has... You know, what's the difference between the Nevi'im and the... What's the difference between separation? Separation is Hashem versus Abraham. Hashem versus Hashem and Yaakov. That's it. And Shmuel tells me, the Am, he talks to us. Everything is Shaliach for the Am. Kohanim is for us.
I think they say like this. Gracious is Hashem to the individual. Shemos is Hashem through a leader, through Moshe. You figure. Moshe, Aaron, Yechidim, Hashem,
but to us.
To us, right. But through Yochid. Vayikra, it's Hashem through the Kohanim. Hashem, not through an individual, through a group.
Yeah, his agents.
Vayikra, it's Hashem, nobody. It's the Masoros. It's just the Am. No intermediary. And the Varim is Moshe to the Am. Moshe to the Am. Moshe, very nice. It's a different, relationship. Very powerful. Very, very nice.
Adam Rishon is also Hashem and Adam. Hashem, just one person. Abraham. It's him. We just finished with Chumash Bereshit, and suddenly it's a different level of communication. Between us and Hashem. Now, suddenly, we are. Who called us Am?
They said he was a nice guy, right?
This is a nation. I wish you would know.
Well,
I'm B'nai Yisrael, Rav Yatsun Mimela. I'm B'nai
Yisrael.
What about
still have this.
What about
this
Roman Roll?
Monitor. Till Wednesday.
Okay.
There was, and I don't know what happened to me. What was the cause of this whole thing? The doctor didn't tell me yet, but I know. There was one medication that I took, and that caused
it.
I fainted twice.
The medication.
Kabbalat Shabbat. In Shul.
It's a medication.
It's a medication. He says, he told me, stop this. You still taking this? Stop it immediately.
I know, medication. I once took medication. It's very funny. But you know, medication, what you can do. I once took a medication. I lay on Shabbos. I used to lay more often. And then I had a medication. So doctor gave me a very strong medication. Very good. Nerve issue. And he tried this medication, see what happens. And he told me to take a very big dosage. So I ended up taking very, very small, a few amount. And right away I felt, this is no good. There's something wrong with this medication. Got up to him, I started saying, something. I don't exist. And I start reading my life. It stopped me. I realized afterwards it was the medicine. The medicine that made me so crazy. You get tense and it's nerves. Like wow, the medicines can be very powerful.
My wife says you have to be your own doctor.
Yeah, of course.
In addition, you know, like you have the ways, you follow the ways, but
you have to
draw some.
Absolutely, exactly. And all the time.
This was much clear.
We used to do it. I went for about 2 years. And after his father passed away, he became much more serious.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and became much more halacha. My wife hated the halacha. She would like the hashkafa stuff.
Yeah, you know, I didn't pick up on that.
Once every third week, you would be halacha. He started to do a lot more serious.
So we're talking about
and he wasn't as interested.
We're learning. We're talking about sitting and learning. He went off topic. He never stopped it.
He gave a point. He had one idea that was catching the pasuk, and then he'd go off on it.
Okay, let's begin. We're up to page Kuf Tzadi Vav, Halacha Reish Chaf Aleph. It's late because we're Shchoyish, so we'll do very little.
Reish Chaf?
Reish Chaf, yeah. Reish Chaf Aleph.